So it's sort of like we also have to just not give up. Because remember, how can we give up? There's no way to give up at all because we come from God and it's just going to work itself out. That all works together. So if you've become a dried up old husk, then just throw yourself in a pool somewhere. And we all do, day after day, I mean, on the spiritual path. I mean, many times over these years, I would just realize that somehow, you know, I'd lost some piece of it. And at first, you're so distressed. Oh, this, oh, that. And then you just figure, you know, what is the point of lamenting this? I was talking to someone just recently, and she was saying, talking about the changes that she was trying to make in her life, even though at this stage in my life, she said, I'm making all these changes, even though I'm so old. I don't think she was even as old as I am. But I said, well, look, you really, if you don't make these changes now, you're just going to be born with those characteristics. I know I talked about this in context of another person recently. But you're just going to be born. Like there's no, if you have those qualities and you don't want to have them, it doesn't matter if you're 99 and it's your last day in that body, make an effort to end it then. Because nothing is going to happen when you die except that your body's going to be small and you're going to be exactly the same. So there's no such thing as being too old to make an effort because there is no age. In fact, better to make even a little tiny effort while you can still remember it. Otherwise, you get born in that body and you're so busy trying to, you know, find your mouth with the spoon that it takes you a long time to figure out. Or you have that characteristic so strong in you that you magnetize it to in a horrible way. So just who cares how old you are and how futile the effort is? Just keep going. I read about this odd couple who'd made a study of what caused Alzheimer's, and they really didn't. They were research scientists of some sort. It was just an odd film. So I don't even remember where. But they knew that one of the secrets to keeping any kind of dementia at bay was to keep learning new things and thus keep the brain growing. So they had this whole plan. You know, they learned French at 60. They learned to do watercolors at 65. And at 70, they took up oil painting. And at 75, they started doing sculpture. And they just had all these different things. It was very interesting to just sort of see. They were just like seeing how far they could use the brain and what would be the results of that. And they were doing it in a semi-scientific manner. I think that's a wonderful way to think about ourselves spiritually. Master tells that story about the woman that he met when she was in her 80s. She was in her 80s when she discovered Master in the spiritual path, and Master said she became liberated. Because as soon as she met him and realized what the potential was, she just thought of nothing else. And she only had a few years, but she just put all her energy behind it. And so maybe you only have a few weeks or a few years to change some lifelong characteristic. Well, you might as well start now. It's sort of like getting an advanced placement class before you go to college. You know, you might as well get a little head start, and then you don't have to take that test. You don't have to take those beginning courses again. Yes?
I found, without expecting it, that's what spiritual renewing, that the effect it had on me, was just that, you know, I may have been dry in some areas but wasn't fully aware of it, but going up there, it just started filling me with that old familiar juice. And I just suddenly just felt so much more kind of alive and remembering of what it's really about. That it's just really useful to do stuff like that.
Well, you know, you've raised a very good point, which is, you see, once you become disoriented spiritually, you make decisions that are based on keeping you disoriented. That's why it's not too good an idea to say, oh, I don't feel like going here now. I don't feel like doing this one. I don't feel like doing that one. Well, just do it because it's right. And that's why I try to say people about Sunday service above all. Just get in the habit of coming and don't ask yourself whether you feel like coming or not. Because if you don't feel like coming and don't come, you'll never feel like coming. And if you say, oh, I don't feel like going to Spiritual Renewal Week this year, well, if you don't go, you will never feel like coming. Because you dry up, and then you don't even remember why you wanted to do it. That's why Master said the habit of regular meditation will take you through difficult karmic tests. The habit of regular group meditation will be your protection against the onslaught of delusion. Because if you just are in the habit of putting yourself in the right vibrations, you will be resuscitated instead of dehydrating to death, right? So it's a very good comment that you made. You know, I was up there too this last week, and there was something so joyful about it. It just, I sort of had to go because they put me as a Friday. I mean, I liked to go anyway. I would have gone anyway. But I was teaching on Friday, and so that obligated me to have to hear all the classes because, as those of you who know the story Jeeves and the Song of Songs, where Jeeves tricks someone into singing the song Danny Boy is the fifth person on the program to sing the same song. It's a long, complicated story, but it's an in-joke. Otherwise, you don't want to sing Danny Boy for the fifth time. You need to sort of know what everyone else has done. But as a consequence, you just sit there and you just absorb all this fabulous energy. And afterwards, you remember why you love it. And the very thought, the reason you don't want to go is because you've forgotten why you would go. You have to be very suspicious and don't give too much to your I feel. I mean, I feel is okay, but I feel can also really lead you down a dark hole that you can't get out of. You know, just do things objectively according to what's duty. Now, I don't mean that to a fault. I'm just talking about if you're psychologically healthy and you're a sensible person, just as Sister Gyanamata said, don't think about whether you like it or not, just do it. And then afterwards you'll realize why it was the right thing. Okay, 66. So while the vessels, one by one, were speaking, we're having all these little souls are having this conversation about the nature of creation. So while the vessels, one by one, were speaking, one spied the little crescent all were seeking, and then they jogged each other, brother, brother, hark to the porter's shoulder knot a creaking. Now, Master said this is all very, esoteric references to obviously to the spiritual eye and to the sound of the om, the creaking of the knot. Is the om sound that the divine makes. The other thing that's interesting about this is that you have this little fellowship of souls all helping each other.
And they're all pots.
And they're all pots. Yeah. It's cute. This little bit of pots reflecting the divine light. And you remember, Swami always makes such a point of the fact that Master called it self-realization fellowship, which is actually quite a contradiction in terms. But it isn't really, because he was really trying to say it. We're all seeking self-realization, but in fellowship with one another, because through that friendship with one another, a great deal of progress will take place. And through helping, the act of helping one another also progresses those who help. And so we have this little scene where they've all been trying to figure this problem out, and then all of a sudden one of them gets a little bit of a glimpse, and he sort of says, look, there's the light, and then they all scurry together. And it's really a charming picture, and also a very real picture. Swami was, I was listening to a tape of his recently, and he was making the comment. He was saying, the older I get, he said, the more friendship is the only thing that really matters to me. He said, all these projects and so on that I keep doing, he said, it's fine, but friendship is what really counts. And elsewhere, I think it was in here, Master spoke about, because in friendship, we get to learn how to be divine. We get to learn how to be unconditionally accepting and supportive. And it's friendship that teaches us our the necessity to have the patience and the kindness and the perception of soul realities that true friendship is based on. And that makes us into divine beings, plus we do the service for one another. Durga had a dream, or actually I'm not sure that it was actually Durga's dream or whose dream it was, but someone at Ananda had a very interesting dream. Where they dreamt that we were, I think, somewhere in Ananda village, and there was this huge circle of people. Or maybe there might have been several circles. I'm not sure which way it went. It doesn't really matter. And she recognized a lot of her brothers and sisters from Ananda in that circle. And we were all together in this circle, and then every once in a while she said somebody would ascend. Somebody would disappear from the circle because they had become free and they went into the infinite. And she said, but the most moving part of the whole experience was it didn't matter, because every time somebody ascended, you were as happy as if it was you. It just didn't make any difference. There was no feeling of, oh, I wish that were me. And there was the sense of, by all sort of working together in this circle, we would all eventually ascend, and each person's success was equally belonged to all. Isn't that a dear thought? Swamiji, someone asked him about that dream. He says, yes, that is what it is. But that's the spirit of friendship, true friendship, that doesn't think, oh, what about me? It thinks, oh, how wonderful for you, genuinely. Number 67 says, ah, with the grape my fading life provide, and wash my body whence the life has died, and in a winding sheet of vine leaf wrapped, so bury me by some garden side, some sweet garden side. Master calls this a prayer at death, or a prayer as we enter into superconsciousness, and to finally sever the bondage of the ego and have the soul become free. So as my life is dying, bathe me in divine consciousness. As my ego is giving up, you know, let the divine take over. And let it cleanse my body of all further human desires. And wrap me in this divine consciousness that I will be free in bliss. It's just so sweet. Number 68 says, then even my buried ashes, such a snare of perfume, shall fling up into the air, as not a true believer passing by, but shall be overtaken unaware. And this is his way of writing the same poem, may I awaken thy love in all hearts. May thy love shine forever on the sanctuary of my devotion, and may I awaken thy love in all hearts. And he's just saying, once the ego is... once the ego has been burned up and it's all ashes and it's gone, let the sweetness of the divine flowing through me, just let no one be immune to the sense of what that's about. And it's a beautiful prayer to be a blessing to others. Elsewhere, I think it's in this book, but I'm not sure. It is in this book. Live in such a way that your life shall be a blessing to others, and the memory you leave behind will be like a sweet fragrance. It's sort of interesting to just think about yourself just moving through life, coming in and out of a room, talking to people, you know, getting up in the morning, everything you do. What kind of an aura goes with you? You know, is there a sweet, fragrant perfume that causes everyone to be caught unawares and uplifted into the spirit? Or do you leave the rank stench of selfish thoughts and desires? That beautiful quotation that I quoted to you, we pulled it out and quoted, leaving out the remark in there, the set between the commas, you know, let all your thoughts be sweet, not the rank stench of selfishness, because it was so sweet to say it without putting that in. But how Master actually wrote it was to draw the contrast. And so, you know, we think that the way to help people is to be on their case a lot. But really the most, you know, love changes people much more. Sometimes love is stern and emphatic, but through the years with Swamiji, we have all seen that because there's no question about his friendship, and because he's so solidly in our camp, he can be strong when he needs to be, and it's not difficult. And you never feel, you always know that he's on your side. I was contemplating just the concept of compassion recently. You know, there's so many different ways that we can react when people do things that we're not fond of. And we tend to react with an analytical judgment, some of us, analytical judgment, appraisal, you know, so on like that. Whereas many people in the world simply react with compassion. And that's really what the masters do first. Their first response to anything that happens is compassion. And then whatever a response comes out after that, which may be, you know, masters can be stern and scolding or many different things. But it all, the first reaction is compassion. Whereas for so many people who have more delusion, that's not the first reaction. The first reaction is in some way related to self. You know that story in Autobiography of a Yogi when Master leaves Sri Yukteswar and goes off to be with Ram Gopal, Muzumdar, and then he comes back to the ashram. And he walks back in, and Master says to Sri Yukteswar, well, I thought you'd be angry. And Sri Yukteswar says, anger comes from thwarted desire. I have no desire except your highest welfare. It was just so simple. Whereas so many people would react first, well, I know my walking out, Master says, must have been very inconvenient for you. Yes, but Sri Yukteswar's response was compassion. And so therefore there was no self that he had to assert. It was just he felt compassion for Yogananda making a mistake. And so all of his thought was how to ease that error, not how to make himself feel better for what had happened to him. You see what a difference it is? It's just an enormous thing to work with, to start always first with compassion and then see what follows from that. If you have that feeling first, what would you do? Sometimes you just have to pretend or imitate it, but imagine it and then see what comes in. It's very fascinating. Let's take a short break.